Hello, I'm Mariette Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to understand ourselves, deepen our relationships, and strengthen our emotional well-being. Thank you for tuning into Calm, Clear and Helpful, the weekly podcast series introducing you to wellness professionals and creative minds inspiring meaningful change. Today's focus is Yvonne Shapiro's cancer journey, surviving by outgrowing her old opinions. What happens when life challenges us to rethink some of our deepest held beliefs? In the thought-provoking conversation I hope to have now, a remarkable woman shares how facing two separate cancer diagnoses encouraged her to change her views in order to live fully. My guest is Yvonne Shapiro, dancer, wordsmith, and data squirrel from Cape Town. Welcome, Yvonne. I'm so pleased to have you.
Thank you so much. And I'm so glad that we are having this conversation. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't counted the years, but I think I've known you and your life partner, Gail Howarth, for almost 25 years.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and we met through circle dancing, which we're going to refer to today. But we're also talking about an issue that's seldom discussed openly, which is living with cancer. And I'm very grateful to you for talking about this so openly and for writing your brand new book, Funky Hats, Hope and Love, Outgrowing Old Opinions to Survive Two Cancers. Would you like to give some background by giving us a brief overview of your life and career path, please?
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, as people usually do, I had no idea that I would land up in this space and facing these things. So I had a pretty normal childhood and enjoyed school and went to university and became a maths teacher. I had really wanted to be a maths teacher. And in the end, I found that teaching within the system as it was at the time was not for me. And I ran away screaming into industry. And at the same time as that, various themes had started to unfold in my life. One of them being a love of numbers, but expressing it differently from how that had happened. And also another huge theme in my life started already in junior school, which was dancing. I just found that was such a way of stress release, expressing myself, being with other people in a community with fantastic music. And that is how I found my way into circle dancing, which we'll probably talk about a little more just now. And then became a circle dancing teacher in parallel with a very different kind of working life. So I've always had the dancing and the numbers and the information living side by side and interweaving with each other. And I eventually became the director of a huge database and information system at the South African Qualifications Authority. It's called the National Learners Records Database, and contains the information about everybody in South Africa who has a qualification from what's called NQF Level 1 upwards, and includes all matric and university and technical and vocational education. And it's who's there, who's got the qualifications, what the qualifications are, and are they registered. So very, very sort of head-based, and then the dancing was very, very heart-based, and they've always interwoven. And I've also become very interested in leadership and management and management style. And actually, I thought I was going to write a book about that, but landed up when life happened, as it does, and one of the themes in my book is life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. And I left SACWA with a lump in my breast, had to have a mastectomy, and then went on a cancer journey. So that was a huge, huge change for me and an unexpected start to my retirement. And I then, although I did have time during that cancer journey when it wasn't obvious that it was a cancer journey, I then did land up sort of tracking that journey. So using the head part of me to make sense of what was going on while experiencing it with my heart at the same time.
Yes, I was amazed when I read your book to realize that the fact that you had been tracking so many things, I think it enriches the book to such an extent, but we will come to a lot of that. The first thing I'd like to ask you about is the title, Funky Hats, Hope and Love, Outgrowing Old Opinions to Survive Two Cancers. Could you first talk about, let's start with the funky hats.
Yes. I had always had this massive dread of losing my hair. It was one of the things that made me petrified of chemo. It may sound silly because there are many other things one should be petrified of with chemo, but that was one of them. And I was completely anti-chemo, radiation, all of those things. I thought they were going to kill me and that would be that. So that's a whole theme in itself. But when I actually did have chemo and I did lose my hair and I was devastated, I then turned around and realized it's not so bad and I can actually experiment with wearing wonderful hats. And my sister Julia was very instrumental in that because she was coming to visit me from London and she ordered various hats online, sent back the ones she thought wouldn't be very nice and kept the others. And brought them to me and started this whole wardrobe of amazing cancer hats. And then somebody knitted me a beanie, somebody who I don't even know very well. She just heard I was on this journey and she knitted me a beanie. It's a beautiful kind of wine color. And my friend Tricia knitted me a beanie and I tried. I wasn't as good as the ones who really know what they're doing. And I tried various things, and I actually landed up having quite a jol with my funky hats.
Yeah, I love that light note, and whoever reads the book will discover how it weaves throughout the book. Then we come to the part of the two cancers. Could you say more about that?
Yes. I left SACWA, as I said, with the lump in my breast. It was estrogen-positive breast cancer, was not reduced by trying to use natural remedies, and my then integrative doctor and I decided I should have a mastectomy, and then we'd take it from there. And I did, and had actually 4 good years before other things started to kick in with further issues around the breast cancer. It had metastasized, and the treatment was not strong enough to actually help me with that. And I then also, while being monitored for the ongoing breast cancer, having met the most fantabulous oncologist you ever would meet. I call him my mensch oncologist in the book. His name is Garth, and he had put me onto all sorts of things for the breast cancer that were helping me. But when we did one of the many monitoring CT scans, we found something else going on and at first couldn't work out what. And then it became very clear that that was non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So I had the proper diagnosis and biopsy and all of those things. And that was when I landed up being faced with the choices that I needed to make and the opinions I needed to reverse, which we'll come into a little bit more just now. But so the two cancers were estrogen positive breast cancer and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I currently am completely clear of the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but the estrogen positive breast cancer is with me for life.
Yes. And the hope and love I'm sure listeners will find when they listen to this conversation, which are crucial issues. I would like you first to explain how you came to write this book and for whom.
I had always wanted, well, actually, no, there wasn't quite an always. So let's play that again. At first, I kept the cancer issue quite private, but I then got onto the understanding that I did want to keep my nearest and dearest people posted on what was going on with me. So I started a WhatsApp group called Yvonne's Updates, and I started sending little updates to people as different things unfolded to do with my cancer and my treatments and so on. And that group grew, and I actually needed to split it into two. There was one group which was a chat group where people can actually see what everybody else is saying. And there were other people who didn't want to be constantly pinged with things that everybody was saying. They just wanted to hear my broadcasts. So I've got these two groups, and they are still ongoing. And I always included a little photograph of something I was seeing or the view from my hospital room at times or those kinds of things. And I grew and grew this set of updates that I'd been sending. And I also kept them on record in a blog. And I then began to realize that I was tracking a real journey. And by the way, that is one opinion that I won't revise. I don't consider the cancer journey to be a war, a battle, a fight, a warrior situation, and so on. I really see it as a journey. And I had this track of a journey. And I had quite a lot of learnings that I'd been sharing along the way. And also a deepening understanding of how incredibly helpful the people surrounding me were. The people who were sending their love, their good vibes, the circle dancers were dancing for me. They were putting my name in the middle of the circle every week and dancing for me. And I had gathered this quite rich set of updates and information and resources, actually, in the end. And I wanted to share it with a much bigger audience for people who are walking with somebody who has cancer, people who have cancer who might find some of my tips useful, for people who are just generally interested in the process of illness and healing and what those actually mean. So that was what sowed the seed of actually turning it into a book. I took my updates and I wove the thread through them. I added some retrospective understandings and really tried to clarify for me when the different points were in my story. And I had a fantastic editor who helped me really surface all of that and turned it into something that I felt would be useful and that people might actually enjoy reading about a subject that is deemed very unenjoyable.
Yes, and I must say it's a very gripping book and also, as you said, very useful. I have read things there that I didn't know. I think I should count myself fortunate that I didn't know. But in the resources, for instance, You have a section, things you would have liked to know, and things that, what did you call it, that you would not have liked to know. How did you phrase that?
I was glad I didn't know
yes.
beforehand. Yeah. They might have frightened me off, but actually I am very glad I have walked the path I have.
Yeah. Yvonne, can you start with your cancer diagnosis in June 2017?
Yes. The thing that nobody wants to happen, I felt a little lump. And it was just literally I had brushed across the underside of my breast in passing and boom, that didn't feel right. And I must say I was never very good at what people say one should do, and that is check oneself regularly, with palpation, whatever you want to call it. I was good at having my mammograms. And I would have an annual mammogram, and this was months since the last one. But there was suddenly this lump, little tiny lump, turned out to be diameter just under a centimeter. And I went, that was a Saturday, I went the Monday or Tuesday to have another mammogram, and then the radiologist said I must do a biopsy, and so he did the biopsy, and off it went, and he phoned me with the news that it was malignant, which was absolutely terrifying. One really does feel one's world falls apart, and especially my mother had the same thing, and I really, my world shifted on its axis when my mother told me that she had breast cancer, and I was feeling now the same, really terrified. It was actually quite unpleasant, and I don't really go into this in the book, but the radiologist, who I really didn't know and didn't particularly like, wanted to himself arrange a lumpectomy for me in the next few days and then get me put onto hormones. And I was terribly upset by this and also the pompous way in which he was handling it. And there was like nothing about how you're feeling or anything. It was absolutely awful. And my then integrative doctor, who I managed to get hold of later, who I did still trust at the time. Unfortunately, I lost my faith in him a while later. But at the time, he said, you have options. And so I did, actually. And I chose the option of not rushing into a lumpectomy and hormones and so on. And I tried for a few months then this injectable medicine. It's actually anthroposophical medicine, which is alternative, and it's called Iscador, and it's made from mistletoe, and I used to inject this every 2 days. And Iscador can work for some people, but it didn't work for me, and it didn't reduce or take away the lump. So I then did agree with everybody that I must have a mastectomy, but I did it under much kind of more controlled and kind of helpful to me circumstances than rushing into anything. And I had the breast lump arrived in June. I had the mastectomy in November, and I did have the most fantastic pair of surgeons. One is Dr. Aaron and Looney, who is mentioned in the book, and the other is Dr. Shane Barker, also mentioned in the book. And what a pair they are together. And Dr. Looney did the mastectomy, and then Dr. Barker did the reduction on the other side. So my whole shape changed. And that actually, in retrospect, that was wonderful. And I had been terrified also of having the mastectomy because, of course, when feels this loss of one's breast. I mean, you know, it's like such a personal identity thing. And I nearly jumped out the bed while waiting for the operation and nearly ran down the road screaming. That was how I was feeling. And afterwards, what a relief, actually, because I had always been very large and I now have one flat side and one very neat, tiny side. And actually, I also, if I could have it over, I would just have them both off. And then I would be able to decide what size I wished to be on a particular day, or do I wish to go with nothing? I can't do that. I'm always scared I might frighten the children if I walk around lopsided. So I actually, I was very fortunate to be told about knitted knockers by a cousin who is also a palliative doctor. And she told me about them, and I'd never heard of such a thing. And wow, I really feel that that's one of my key resources in the book, that I discovered knitted knockers. They're made of the most fantastic, well-dyed cotton. So when I say well-dyed, the dye has no reaction with one's skin. And so you must get the right cotton thread to knit with, and then stuffed with merino wool stuffing. And one actually gets the knitted knockers kit, which includes the thread and the stuffing and the pattern. And all you have to do is get the knitting needles or the crochet hook, and you can make your own. Or also, any knitters sitting out there wondering what to volunteer for, there are people making knitted knockers all over the world for donation to oncology units. And the kit in South Africa costs 65 rand a kit. And depending on the size of the knitted knocker that you're going to make, you can either make one or two out of the kit.
Yes, you also introduced me to that. I mean, I learned about it from you. And those who read the book will see there's a photograph or two so they can see what it looks like. And it's so good to know about this, because I had never heard about that before.
Yes, it's one of the world's best kept secrets. Probably the people who make the fancy expensive prostheses don't want us to find out. But my goodness me, I tried one of those for swimming, and I washed it and took it back because I could not. And I actually, that's another best kept secret. I put some bubble wrap in a bank bag and put it inside that side of my costume. And that is my prosthesis for swimming.
Yeah, there we go. Listeners can realize that there's very practical things in your book, and then also we have the deep philosophical insights. Yvonne, I think we haven't mentioned that at the time, I think you and Gail were still living in Pretoria.
Yes, I was. And this doctor that I was still working with was living in Cape Town. So I had to do things on the phone, or I had to come down to Cape Town, where I now live, anytime I wanted to consult him or to have any of his treatments. And I also came to Cape Town for the operation. The wonderful pair operates here in Cape Town, and I was at Kingsbury Hospital for that.
Yeah.
Yes, so there was this kind of bit of back and forth between Pretoria and Cape Town.
And then you've just mentioned that you had four good years. Could you tell us about these years?
Yes. At that time, I carried on using the Iscador, hoping that it was going to protect me forever from anything else that would happen. And for a while, that did work. And I also did change my eating habits, because if you're using Iscador, you can't then eat to counteract it. So I was avoiding deadly nightshades and sugar and soya, because estrogen-positive breast cancer should not be associated with soya. And I was eating hormone-free chicken, and I still do, and various other things that I had worked out should go with this whole choice. So I was very healthy at that time, very active, very energetic, had this wonderful experience of starting out on new paths. For instance, I could now start up a circle dancing group that met on a weekday morning. So that would have been unheard of while I was still very busy working. And so I also joined U3A, the University of the Third Age. And for people who don't know what that is, it's people who are in our third age. We've been through the childhood and the studying and all that. We've been through the adulting and the perhaps bringing up children or working hard anyway, whether or not you're bringing up children and finding partners or not, as the case may be. And then there's the time after that where you're taking all the wisdom that you've gathered and you're using it in new ways for the last phase of your life, for however long that's going to be. And the people in U3A share their passions and their expertise with each other. It's not official courses like you would get at an adult education center. It's people sharing together as members of this kind of movement, and you offer them as a volunteer. You offer whatever you're offering. And my two things were circle dancing and computer skills. And I was having a wonderful time doing both of those. And also, I did have to do some work because I had to supplement my pension. I did some consulting work in the field that I'd been in, information management. And I also moved into editing and proofreading and became involved with the life orientation textbooks that have been released more recently. I was doing some editing there. And then also for quite a long time, I was the first proofreader for Daily Maverick, the DM168, which is the paper version of Daily Maverick. And then I was joined by a couple of other proofreaders. And then I also mentored the people who were writing the children's section of DM168, making sure that we were inclusive, that it was pitched in the right way and those sorts of things, and had a wonderful time doing that. So all of those started at different phases in my retirement. Also done various other editing of some books and some university dissertations, things like that. So I really was having a fantastic time, thoroughly enjoying my retirement. I still am thoroughly enjoying my retirement, but in slightly different ways. And of course, then there was COVID that came along, and I then landed up recording a whole lot of circle dancing for people who could no longer come to me to dance. We couldn't meet up. So I made a series of 25 videos, which Gail very, very kindly videoed me as Facebook Lives, and it's now on YouTube, and we could share the link if people want to see. But people were dancing along with me on the live sessions and then also using the recordings afterwards. And I'm very, very glad I made those because they feel like a further resource. So we were trying to do the best we could during COVID lockdowns and so on. And also in the middle of that, we were making decisions about downscaling, finding a smaller place to live, and that we would move. And we weren't sure where yet. And eventually we both settled on Cape Town. So Gail and I had decided that Cape Town was going to be the place to be. And we both managed to sell our different houses in Gauteng quite quickly. We were both living in my house, and I sold that very quickly, surprisingly so. And Gail sold the house that she'd been renting out in Joburg, and that was how we managed to move to Cape Town. So that was what happened before the next cancer step.
Yes, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so when we had just clinched the deal on my house sale and we were looking for a place to rent in Cape Town, and we were still in Pretoria, this was July 2021, I suddenly developed this hectic pain, rib pain. I thought I'd perhaps cracked some ribs or something like that. And it actually came out of nowhere. The exact moment was we had just had a Zoom circle dancing session for World Circle Dance Day 2021. And I sat down at the kitchen table and had a cup of tea afterwards. And when I stood up, I was in such pain, I didn't know what to do with myself. It was that sudden. Nothing and then everything. And that wouldn't go away. And I went to physio and she said, yes, I do think you might have cracked some ribs. And I also told her that when my mother had metastatic breast cancer, some of her ribs had cracked. So I was a little scared. And she noted that. And when she found that she couldn't help me to get it right, she sent me for an X-ray. And she was much more concerned about what she saw behind the ribs than the ribs themselves, because there were the little nodules. And that was then confirmed with a CT scan. I had metastatic cancer. I had nodules inside my lung. And yes, the ribs had cracked because my bones were affected. And this was pretty devastating for me. I had always thought I was going to be the poster girl for natural treatment. And I was not going to have chemo. And I was not going to have radiation. And I was not going to have hormones, because I thought that they were going to kill me rather than the actual cancer itself. So that gives a clue as to which old opinions I had thoroughly had to reverse quite quickly. But I also discovered that I had been neglected. The doctor that I was working with knew I didn't have an oncologist, and he had neglected to make sure that I had a CT scan every year. He said that he had a brand new treatment that I must try the moment I get to Cape Town, called sonophotodynamic therapy. And I thought, okay, I'll probably regret it if I don't try it. Maybe it's going to be the final fantabulous thing that's going to really take away all the cancer that I've ever had. And I was still coming to terms with the fact that I did now still have cancer. I wondered whether I was in total remission, but I had never been asked to prove that. So I did try the sonophotodynamic therapy after I arrived in Cape Town. So just to kind of complete the picture, Gail and I moved in September 2021 to Cape Town. So that was just 2 short months after I had realized that I now had metastatic cancer. And by the way, my ribs were slowly healing by themselves. So I wasn't in total agony all the time and managed the car trip to Cape Town and all of that. And here we were, arrived in our new rented place and settling in. And as soon as we had settled in, a month later, I tried sonophotodynamic therapy, which is outlined more thoroughly in the book. It did absolutely nothing for me, and it cost almost 90,000 rand. And I had to pay that out of my own pocket, because Discovery Health does not cover those kinds of things. And in fact, as with all medical aids, they have a generous oncology benefit, but you cannot make use of it if you are doing natural treatment. So I had not really done much with it at all. The original mastectomy had been covered by my hospital plan. The only thing that Discovery Health was covering were any screenings I did, like scans and biopsies. So I paid that out of my own pocket. And later on, in a most incredible way, which is also in the book, I landed up selling my father's violin that I had and tried to learn, but was a bit late in my life, but I had it. And I sold it for way more than I thought I was going to get. And the amount that I retained after all commissions and giving a little gift to somebody from it was almost exactly the same as what I'd paid for the SPDT, as it's called, sonophotodynamic therapy. So that was, it felt like my father had looked after me from the other side. It was profound.
Yes, that was one of the most beautiful parts of the book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, that was very precious. But yeah, but it was a bit devastating when the actual treatment hadn't worked. And also, I had learnt when I was still in Pretoria and I needed the CT scan to confirm those nodules, that you always have to get a specialist's permission or authorization request to have a CT scan. So we had had to contact Dr. Aaron Looney to get his request for me to have a CT scan because he was my surgeon. GPs can't do that. So he had consented to send in the request and that it happened. When I then needed to have a CT scan a while after having the treatment, the sonophotodynamic therapy, I had to ask him again. And he said, I'm not going to request another CT scan on your behalf without actually seeing you. I can't keep on doing this. I have to see you. So I was a little bit sort of huffy about that, which was ridiculous of me. I was just in a bit of a state. And I went along to see him. And he was lovely as always. But he did say to me, you know, I really asked you to take tamoxifen when I operated on you and you didn't. And I'm actually still asking you to take it. And I said, I really, 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 I still don't want to. And he said, well, you might land up having a spinal compression if you don't do something. And I said to him, are you trying to frighten me? And he said, actually, yes, I am. Because you need to hear this. And that was the first time a medical person had said anything to me like that, because I'd been putting all my faith somewhere where it turned out I really probably shouldn't have. And that sat with me. And then shortly after that, when the CT scan results came out, the integrative doctor even said, I think you need some radiation and I think you need to see an oncologist. So that was the first time he'd said that to me in what was now almost 5 years. And the one favor he did me is that he gave me a couple of names of oncologists, and I chose to contact Dr. Garth Davids, and I am so, so blessed that I did that. He is just amazing. And I met him shortly after I contacted him. And he said to me quite clearly that Dr. Ndluni had been correct, that if I carried on like this, I was going to outlive my bones. And he also said to me, you have maxed out on the natural treatment. Of course, it's your choice. But if you don't have radiation right now, you're going to have big problems. And I was absolutely terrified because I did know of somebody, the brother of an ex-colleague, who had died after having radiation, and he had had radiation burns. And I don't know how much contributed to what, but it scared the living daylights out of me. But I thought, I'm going to have to try this. I'm going to move in this direction now. And Garth also said to me, you do need to take hormones as soon as your radiation is over. And I actually accepted. And I really started to make the turnaround. I still said to him, I draw the line at chemo. And he said to me, it's not indicated right now. Mm. So I said, what a relief. And I had the radiation and found that radiation and I go very well together. It was fantastic. At that point, the radiation was on two places in my spine. And I actually really was going to get into difficulties if I didn't have it. And it worked. And those places are absolutely fine to this day. And I have had further radiation since, and all the times I've had it, it's been good. It's worked. And it does make you feel a bit off, especially if it goes too close, for instance, to your esophagus, which then makes you very nauseous, things like that. But it passes in about 3 weeks. It passes. Makes you tired as well, but it passes. And it actually has given me a lot of relief in my life now. So that was the beginning of my new part of my journey.
Yeah, along with a hormone therapy, right?
That's absolutely that. That was the second piece of that, yes. And then I happily went along with that for about a year before other things started to happen.
Yes, I think we've now reached March to April 2023, when you had to wrestle with another painful inner conflict.
Absolutely, and my goodness me, it was something else. Yes, because in slightly before that, in February 2023, my routine scan had shown some abnormalities in my spleen. And we couldn't make out, and I always say we, because Garth really participates with his patients or clients, whatever you want to call us. So we were puzzled and we were trying to work out what it was. Of course, he really was, but yeah. He then said, let us monitor that carefully, see what happens to you, and we'll probably make your scan, your next scan, a little bit earlier than we would usually, just to see. So I then went off with that understanding, and I was feeling absolutely fine. But then I started feeling not fine, and I thought I just had flu with some gastro, which at that time of year, I often get. That's been a pattern through my whole life. So I thought, okay, I've got my usual sort of gastric flu, but it wouldn't quite lift. And I was also feeling sort of out of balance and craving funny foods and just not okay and feeling really off. But I couldn't quite put my finger on it, and I certainly didn't link it to anything to do with cancer at that point. And then towards the end of March, one morning, I woke up to find swellings on various parts of my neck, and that was scary. And I actually phoned and said, I think we need to do the scan now. And it just happened that Garth wasn't here. I think he was out the country for a little bit. So a locum organized the scan for the very next day, and I went, and I had it. And then this locum phoned me the same afternoon, and I tend to have wildly positive or wildly negative experiences with doctors. This one says to me, it's not good. Right, that's now what I hear on the phone. It's not good. And I thought, what is this? I was terribly upset. I said, I don't think I'm going to talk to you any further. And I put down the phone. And I haven't yet said this, I had a new integrative doctor. I had now this lovely person called David Nye. And I got hold of him. And I had luckily been requesting that all my CT scan results go to him as a courtesy copy. So he had the copy and he went through it with me. And he was, I can't say exactly reassuring, because nothing's exactly going to reassure you when you realize you're in deep trouble. But he really did help me to start breathing again. And he was saying, if it is lymphoma, which it probably is, but we're going to have to, you will be asked to have a biopsy. And he said, if it is, I don't have any treatment to offer you. And I do think there's a place for everything. And you really do need to consider your options. And that was wonderful to hear, because it just helped me start to try and open my mind even further than I had to open it. So I was now starting to think deeply about that. And very soon after that, I managed to have the conversation with Garth. And he agreed with what David had said. And he did say that if it proves to be non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, chemo is a very good choice. And he really does recommend I consider it. It's not chemo that he would give me. He would need to refer me to a hematologist. And he did have one in mind that he was going to consult with, who works in the same hospital as him, which is Constantiaberg Mediclinic, who I cannot recommend highly enough, the whole hospital. So he was going to have that conversation, but also in the meantime, he was going to immediately refer me to have a biopsy. So I had the biopsy. That one was taken from under my arm. And it was, I think, a lymph node under my arm. And it did indeed prove to be non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And then I had to wait a little while for the referral to the hematologist, because everybody was all over the place over Easter time, because that's when it was. So I knew I was ill, and I was busy coming to terms with having chemo. And by the time I actually walked into the office of Dr. Dani Kotze, another mensch, another amazing person, I was ready to hear anything that he had to say. And he was very, very gentle and lovely and affirming. And he did say that there really is an excellent chance of remission from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma with the chemo that he wished to offer me, which is called R-CHOP. And I can't remember what R-CHOP stands for without actually looking it up, but that's also in my book. It's also known as the Red Devil, by the way, because it is bright red.
Goodness.
And it's hectic chemo. Yeah, so that's its kind of nickname in the field. So he said, yes, let's go. Let's go with this thing. And at that point, I said, yes, I will. And he did tell me that prior to having the chemo, he and I would have another consultation where he would tell me the pertinent things that might happen while I was having chemo, and I would need to sign consent. And I was almost sorry that I had to hear those various things. Of course, it turned out I learned a hell of a lot more when actually having it, but I almost didn't want to hear anything beforehand, but I had to hear a few things, and it was fine. I mean, well, when we did have the consultation, one of the things he had to tell me was that I needed to have a low microbial diet and the things I must eat and the things I mustn't eat and so on. And yes, I had to have a blood test before going home after seeing him. And the next day he phoned me, and I've written about this in the introduction to my book. He phoned me to tell me that I had some rather unstable levels, including my calcium level, which was what had been affecting my weird food cravings. And I also needed a blood transfusion. And without those things, I would not be stable enough to have the chemo. So he was going to admit me that same day, the very day after I met him. And I then spent a few days being stabilized before we had the chemo consultation with Gail present. Gail is at all my consultations, and it's wonderful to have her there. And we then went ahead with the chemo.
Yvonne, as I said, you have such a lot of factual information in the book, but then there is the emotional experience, the spiritual experience, all those experiences. And I have requested you to please read us a passage from your book that moved me deeply, starting with, "I couldn't just die." Would you please read that to us?
Thank you. I'll do that. "I couldn't just die. There was too much I still wanted to experience, to do, to observe. Firstly, 6 nieces and nephews, young people growing up, making decisions, forging lives. And siblings and friends dealing with various situations to do with work, study, and relationships. And then my own relationship. Dancing, always dancing. And an unfinished book about my management style. And then I also wrote quite a lot about what I still want to do, which included travel once more to Morocco, Greece, UK, or Mauritius, swim in warm, warm sea, maybe with dolphins, dance, 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 including teach dancing, finish writing that book about my management style, just be for a while, preferably under positive circumstances, get this house right with Gail, enjoy this house with Gail, finalize exactly what must land up where and with whom. See the people I want to see. And most important, love, love, and love some more."
Yes, and that comes out very often in the book.
I think also that's where the love came from in the title of the book.
On a different note, Yvonne, you had COVID while being extra vulnerable during a chemo cycle. Could you say more about that?
Yes, that was really something. In fact, as it happened, Gail and I both had it. And I think she got it first, and then obviously it found its way to me. And I wasn't sure what I had. I just was feeling flu-y. And the thing that I had been very clearly asked to monitor during that consultation with Dani was what my temperature was doing. And it shot up one night. It was, I think, in July 2023. And I phoned the hematology ward, which was where I needed to phone in if I was having experiences like that. And they said, "You have to get to outpatients now." And the trouble was, Gail was as sick as I was. And we weren't supposed to have contact with each other when one or both of us were sick like this. And she had been sleeping in the lounge. We'd been avoiding each other in the house. We have two bathrooms, thank goodness. But suddenly, she needed to take me there. It was late at night, and it wasn't a very nice night, and we didn't want to ask anybody else to do it, although I suppose in retrospect we could have asked one or two other people to just mask up and take me. So what we actually did was we double masked both of us. She was driving, I was in the back seat, and off we went to outpatients. And as she couldn't really stay there with me or do anything, she just left me there, which was absolutely the right thing to do. And I did take my packed bag with me. And of course, they admitted me and they had to do lung x-rays and all sorts of things. And I was at first admitted actually because there was no space in my usual ward, which had by then become my usual ward. I used to joke about wanting to buy the space where one particular bed was, but they didn't have space there. And I had to go to the other part of that ward, which is the absolutely high protectiveness ward. I forget its exact name now, but it's one where, you know, the people actually have to put on extra protective clothing when they come in. And it's nothing to do with COVID. It's actually to do with the types of treatments people are having there. And so I was in that ward, and you each get your very own room, and people sort of put extra aprons on as they come into your room and so on. So it was all quite dramatic. And I was there, and they needed to get that temperature of mine down. And that's been quite an interesting experience for me as well, because in the kind of medicine I had been more into for so long, which is the alternative medicine, the homeopathic, the anthroposophical, all of those sorts of things, a high temperature is quite a good thing, and you actually help the person through it and out the other side. This was not like that. This was, we've got to get this temperature down. She's in danger. And they had to put all sorts of things in my drip. And they also were testing me for COVID, and it first tested negative. And then they did another swab the next day, and then it tested positive. So, okay, now we knew we were dealing with COVID. So they gave me the strongest COVID medicine that was available. And it took a few days for this temperature to come down and for me to start stabilizing. And by which time that actually moved me into my usual ward because a room had become available. And I do recall the first couple of nights, I almost didn't want to go to sleep. I wanted to stay awake to monitor that I actually stayed alive. It was a very funny experience, possibly coupled with a little bit of delirium. But there was that feeling in me that if I went to sleep, I might not wake up. And I must say, through this whole journey, I've been quite astonished by my survival instinct. I didn't think I had it so much. In fact, I used to say, if I discover I've got a hectic cancer, just make me comfortable until I die. And that actually is not true for me, but I didn't know that until I was in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I really have learned that. And my book starts with three words: I haven't finished. And I think that is the point. And my sequel is going to start with I still haven't finished, because there is a sequel coming.
Yes, I'm very pleased to hear that there's a sequel coming. And there's so much more to talk about in the book, but I have a few more themes that I'd like to touch upon. The one thing is the circle dancing, which is so central to your life. Could you say something about that?
Yes. Circle dancing to me is so beautiful and profound because it is so many things in one. first and foremost, it's beautiful dance. It is dancing some of the ancient dances that have survived to this day, that this professor of dance, I don't know if he was in Germany or Austria, but Bernard Wozin, he went around in about the 70s mostly, last century, and he learnt all the dances from the people who were still doing them and recorded the music and noted the steps and built up this wonderful, wonderful archive of all of this. But archive gives the idea that it's just sitting somewhere. That's not true. It's in huge use. And he asked the Findhorn Foundation in Scotland to be the main custodians of this. And they took it on and they disseminated everything and taught it and made some beautiful recordings of the same music. And whenever you do those dances, you dance them to their original tunes. But we didn't stop there. It's the most beautiful, dynamic, living organism where when we hear beautiful music of all types, we feel the need to choreograph a dance to them so that we can move all together, doing the same movement, to whatever lively, meditative, gentle, various types of music, all types. And it is done in a circle. So that is the difference there from other dancing, where some dancing is done on a stage with performance and you're facing an audience, or you do line dancing, which is all facing in the same direction at the same time. And a lot of people confuse line dancing with circle dancing. It couldn't be more different if it tried. There might be some of the same steps like a grapevine in them, but really they are so different. In circle dancing, you are in a circle together, and the togetherness and the community of that is just palpable. And really, there's so much love in all of this. And it brings a person peace and joy and stress release and all these wonderful things. And at the same time, it brings mutual cultural understanding, because when you are dancing the ancient steps of a particular culture, you're experiencing something of that, of being there, of being in it. And I feel it's really bringing so much more mutual understanding. And for me, it has a subtext of world peace. And I just wish everybody would do circle dancing together, because I think that you can't fight with people that you're dancing with. Mm-hmm. So I just absolutely love that. And there are various branches of circle dancing. I mean, some people call it sacred circle dancing. Other people don't want to do that because they feel that that might be off-putting to some people. So I'm in a school that just calls it circle dancing. But a piece of it, a subset of it, is peace dancing. And there are particular gentle peace dances that you sing or listen to music about peace as you're dancing. And there's a lot more singing along when you do peace dancing. So it's a sort of subgenre of circle dancing. But for me, that discovery was absolutely life-changing. Until then, I had done various other kinds of dancing, including quite a lot of Scottish dancing, both Scottish country and Scottish Highland. And I actually did get a teacher's diploma for Scottish country dancing, which has stood me in good stead in being able to teach dancing in an accessible way. So I've used it for the circle dancing. But I found in circle dancing also just that amazing balance of yin and yang, which you often don't get in other dancing. You've either got all yin or all yang. And this, for me, is a beautiful interweaving of the two. And the actual dance, plus the people who I have connected with through it over the years, and the amazing, amazing traveling that Gail and I have done to do circle dancing in other parts of the world. And we've also brought people here to share what they have to give us. That has been, it has contributed to some of the absolute highlights of my entire life.
Yeah. Thank you, Yvonne. Now we're moving to a question which is quite complex. I actually think I'm still trying to get my head around it. And you once said, and it's best if I quote your exact words, you said, "The paradox of living with the knowledge that I'm both well and ill at the same time, and also knowing that a lot can change in a heartbeat." And you exemplified this in one of the WhatsApp messages you wrote, where you said, "The only way I know I'm playing host to some cancer at the moment is because I'm told so. I truly wouldn't know any other way."
Yes. Indeed. There are many times, and I think a lot of people who have cancer or have lived with cancer would be able to agree with this, is that you feel completely well and you really wouldn't know that you had cancer except that you know that you have cancer. And in fact, after I'd had radiation the first time and I was now taking some hormone pills and I was really feeling fine, I actually asked Garth, I said, "Garth, do I have cancer?" And he said, "Yes, you do." Because I do. And actually, ever since it metastasized, I have had cancer in one form or another all the time. And probably even right through the time when I didn't know it was going to metastasize. And that is a paradox. You're actually walking around with all your normal energy, living your life, and you have cancer because it's there. It's taken up residence and it's there. And I'm afraid I have long got over this thing about sort of being able to meditate it away or to think that, you know, you can just make it go away. I wish that were the case for me, and maybe it has been for some other people, but it's not the case for me. I am host to it. And at the moment, I'm actually in a good phase like that, where most of the time I feel fine. And I wouldn't know that I had cancer right now. And I do. I just do. Last year, there was a change in a heartbeat. And that will be in the sequel, because the book that I've written, the one that we're talking about, goes up until April 2024. And at that point, I had finished the lymphoma chemo. I had found I was in remission. I had got so much better. And I had had a brief period of enjoying what is known as chemo curls, where your hair grows back and it's curly, especially after R-Chop, I think. But I loved it. I actually was very sorry when those curls were cut off, because then my hair became its usual self again. Which, I mean, it's fine, but I did enjoy the curls. But yeah, so I was in a fantastic space, and we visited all of you in Gauteng, and I saw you, and that was lovely. And then that was the end of that book. And I carried on for quite a long time feeling absolutely fantastic and did all things that I wanted to do and so on. And I was just having my wonderful time and then going for my regular CT scans and hearing results from Garth. Yes, everything's sort of under control, etc. And then every now and then also hearing about that there was a little bit of fluid around my one lung, and we'll just watch it, but it's okay. And I couldn't feel it or anything. And then last February, from one day to the next, everything went wrong. Last year, February. And that will be in my sequel as well. Honestly, the 20th of February, I had a most fantastic day. And the 21st of February, I received some not so easy results from a CT scan and developed what I thought was sciatica overnight. So that is the kind of thing that can happen. And that is what you live with. So right now, I know I'm well again after a hectic year last year. And I go through every day appreciating that day. And also in the back of my mind, wondering when the next heartbeat turn is going to happen.
Mm.
So I live with that. I just live with it. And one thing also that will be in the next book is how last year, when I really thought I wouldn't be alive right now anymore, I did start talking to a soul carer. And that is something that hasn't found its way at all into the book we're discussing now, because I hadn't done anything with that yet. But I cannot recommend it highly enough. And the thing that people say is that if you discover that you have metastatic cancer, you should already start talking to a soul carer, otherwise known as a death doula, but I much prefer the term soul carer. The one we talk to is called Rafaela. And although I'm fine at the moment, we just talk to her less often, but she's the one who helps us understand what might happen and also finds out our wishes. And she treats us as a family unit, and it includes the animals. And we have the most beautiful and very wide-ranging conversations, and it does help with all the wanderings as well.
Thank you, Yvonne.
Yeah.
I've asked you to read us to conclude with another profound passage from your book. You know which one.
Yes, I do. Okay, so I wrote that on the 28th of April, 2023, when I was in hospital for one of my bouts of treatment, things like transfusions and so on. And chemo had just started quite recently, and I wrote this. There is a me that walks on the beach and dances expansively and takes up space. There is a me that moves as little as possible and organizes everything to be within reach of the bed. Right now, I'm the latter me. I need to crawl inch by inch towards the first me in time to lose as little muscle mass as possible to try to bring back some energy. My ultimate me at the end of all of this will be something new as yet undefined.
Thank you, Yvonne. One can't say much more after that, except that I need to ask you where listeners can get hold of your book.
Thank you. Yes. The easiest is to send me an email. I don't have a website, but I do have an email address, especially to do with my books. So I keep all of that where I can easily access it. And the email address is funkyhatshopelove@gmail.com. And if you want to put full stops in between hats and hope, and love. You can, but actually Gmail doesn't mind whether or not they're there. So funkyhatshopelove@gmail.com. And the book, I've kept the price down. I had a very wonderful gift to fund the making of the book. So it's only 190 Rand and the PDF is 100 Rand. So that's the way to get hold of it. Thank you. And to get hold of me, if you want to ask me any questions or hear more about circle dancing or any of the other things, that's how you can find me.
Thank you. And I'll include that address in the podcast notes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I just want to say, knowing you and Gail has enriched my life and, of course, dancing with you. And thank you so much for all these years of friendship, and then especially for today, for sharing from your heart. Thank you, Yvonne.
Well, that is all entirely mutual. Gail and I absolutely love having you as a friend, and I'm thanking you for all your support and love over these many, many years. Thank you.
To our listeners, it was good of you to spend time with us. If you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone who may benefit from it. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for free podcasts and articles on physical and mental health, romantic relationships, parenting, and navigating life's transitions. To follow me on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The weekly podcast series Calm, Clear, and Helpful is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other platforms. It's hosted and produced by me, with original music by Mart-Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.